Good day, my name is Anthony Patch, and this is Pulse, a geopolitical examination of the current events happening around the world. Today is the 17th of July, 2024. The events that I'd like to present to you in brief today, in the next perhaps 30 minutes, are taken from the viewpoint of examining former President Donald Trump, and should he ascend once again to the presidency of the United States of America. I'd like to examine from the perspective of looking at events relative to Donald Trump and his potential presidency in terms of what would be his position, what perhaps would be his actions relative to NATO, Israel, and China. So from that direction, that perspective, I'd like to lay the three of these out, beginning with NATO. During Trump's previous presidency here in the United States, he made it very clear that European members of NATO needed to pay what he considered to be their fair share of the defense of their countries, their nations. During that time, NATO was still viewed as an organization that was, as it was intended to be from its founding, that it was still in a defensive posture. Even though we were not, during President Trump's presidency, engaged in a Cold War. That role now has, in the subsequent years, that role of NATO has turned 180 degrees around. It is now more of an offensive organization, especially from the statements that Donald Trump has made as a presidential candidate, that NATO is now more of an aggressor, an offensive organization, and the countries within it. There are some 31 NATO member nations now, again with the United States as the largest financial contributor to NATO as well as militarily. We understand NATO and Ukraine at this point, so I don't need to elaborate on all of that. But what candidate Trump it has been saying for several weeks now, if not several months, is that he claims that within 24 hours, as president, within 24 hours, he could establish a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia, which of course means a ceasefire between NATO vis-a-vis the United States, a ceasefire between NATO and Russia. He is speaking independent of NATO. He is taking it upon himself to say that as the President of the United States, he would, within 24 hours, negotiate a ceasefire directly with Russia, bypassing NATO. Now, you have heard in the last week during the NATO summit in Washington, D.C., Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of last week, that NATO representatives, and in particular the Eurasia group, stated that NATO needs to Trump-proof itself. Trump-proof NATO is what the Eurasia group was stating as part of the NATO symposium or event that took place last week. Trump-proofing NATO, and this has been headlines in many of the media outlets. What I'd offer to you is my expectation as to how would then President Trump accomplish, what would be the steps that he would take to accomplish a ceasefire. I think on the surface, it's pretty easy to expect and therefore to understand that as president, he would issue an executive order stipulating that the United States would no longer support NATO aggression against Russia, withdrawing U.S. financial and military and political support for Ukraine, and thus the United States would withdraw from any confrontations, call it a ceasefire if you want. This isn't a ceasefire on the part of the Ukrainian military, but that would be the end result due to the withdrawal of U.S. support. This would be the United States directly with Russia negotiating a ceasefire that he claims within 24 hours he would be able to accomplish. The mechanism that I would expect him to employ would be an executive order, simply his signature. This would not go through approval, ratification, or anything of the like from the legislative branch, which would be the House and Senate. This would be the executive branch. And if you listen to my live stream last night, in which I was focused on and discussing the Project 2025, which is the transition plan offered by the Heritage Foundation, the transition plan for the new presidency under Trump, that there would be a consolidation of power in this Project 2025 transition plan. This would be a unification within the executive branch of the U.S. government, a unification of power under the president. You can listen to last night's live stream at anthonypatch.com. But nonetheless, this would, I think, be probably the first of many executive orders within hours of Trump being sworn in, hours following the inauguration in January of 2025, that this Project 2025 would be launched as the transition plan, which of course would include U.S. involvement in NATO and specifically involvement with Ukraine versus Russia. So an executive order withdrawing our support is what I think was feared by NATO during the summit last week in terms of Trump-proofing NATO. Trump had in his previous presidency, as I mentioned, really demanded NATO nations to increase their spending. Over the last several months, NATO members have been increasing their spending to reflect the goal of 2% of their GDP earmarked for NATO military operations. The executive order issued by Trump would withdraw that financial support, thus more of the burden falling on the remaining NATO nations. The goal of this withdrawal, of course, on the part of Trump and his administration would be a ceasefire to then bring about negotiations with respect to Ukraine and Putin's demands, conditions for a peace treaty is neutrality on the part of Ukraine, that they are no longer seeking nor granted membership in NATO. That goes away. That's the demand of Putin. Second, the demilitarization of Ukraine. And thirdly, the denazification of Ukraine. Again, this is from Putin's list of demands. My expectation would be exactly the same demands on the part of Trump should he gain the presidency. He would expect the same thing of Ukraine. This notion of Trump-proofing NATO, because NATO views Trump and his presidency, his administration, as a threat to NATO itself, And in the posture of NATO, in terms of being an offensive posture, we have to look at this as Trump NATO-proofing the United States. We turn this 180 degrees around. This notion on NATO's part of Trump-proofing NATO is Trump turning it around and saying NATO-proofing the United States. What I mean by that is, and this is not a statement in the media, this is my applying the contrary, the 180 degree viewpoint. This means that Trump wants to prevent the U.S. from any further involvement in offensive operations, beginning with Ukraine. This could extend to China. NATO's already been talking to Japan and trying to draw Japan into NATO. This is, I believe, Trump on his part in trying to prevent offensive postures and steps, actions by NATO to draw the United States as the larger member of NATO, to draw the U.S. not only into an escalation of potential confrontations with Russia, but possibly now with China itself in the South China Sea. Russia and China right now in the South China Sea are conducting joint drills, joint operations in the South China Sea. This, of course, is putting Taiwan, Japan, and more directly, the Philippines, the Philippine Navy, who's had some confrontations with the Chinese Coast Guard, I put that in air quotes, the Chinese Navy, over the last several weeks. So Trump is viewing this as an effort, this ceasefire with Russia, as a way to begin to pull the United States away from confrontations. This is a move to, on a military standpoint, a military perspective, isolating the United States as more of an isolationist ideology, to pull the military out of Ukraine, pull away from China, pull away from Taiwan. And the question even is being posed by the Trump campaign, let's call it. The question of, does the United States really need to be obligated to defend Taiwan from the aggressions, the perceived aggressions on the part of China? Likewise, is it really necessary for the United States, meaning military, meaning economic, is it really necessary for the United States to defend South Korea? Again, painting a picture of an isolationist movement under a Trump administration. So this really, again, applies the 180 to a lot of the events, the dynamics that are taking place geopolitically around the world. And we will get to Israel here in this, but NATO and China, NATO, Ukraine, Russia, Trump is trying to isolate the U.S. from military conflict. What he wants to do is to enter into not only diplomatic, State Department driven, and in the background military driven negotiations with Russia and China. He wants to put us into a business negotiation framework. Something he, of course, is much more comfortable with are negotiating with other parties from a business standpoint. Now, I'm not trying to promote Putin, but this is akin to, this is very much the approach that Putin has been taking with other nations, be they potential adversaries or allied nations. Putin is trying to take this on a business footing to negotiate what otherwise would be considered military treaties. These would be business agreements, trade agreements, in order to foster peaceful relationships based on trade. This is the direction that Trump wants to take with Russia and with China. So in his negotiations, he's been criticized for promoting, as he did in his previous administration, promoting sanctions and tariffs. Not so much sanctions, but more tariffs. Tariffs being there is a surcharge on goods that are exported by China or Russia or other countries, a tariff making those products more expensive for U.S. consumers to purchase, thus making it more difficult for other countries to penetrate the U.S. market with their goods. But Trump has said that tariffs are good because they're a negotiating tool. This is how you enter into business negotiations, is to say, well, I can reduce or even eliminate tariffs on your products that you would like to offer into the U.S. market. But in exchange for my doing so, you need to do A, B, and C, whatever those may be. These are negotiating tools. And I think it's correct that people should view those as negotiating tools. Now, I'm not trying, as I said about Putin, I'm not trying to be pro-Trump. I'm taking a journalistic, apolitical standpoint here. I'm simply giving the viewpoints and my expectations of how I view Trump's statements and his plans for the future. Okay? If we take Israel into this discussion now, with the expectation that Trump will succeed in withdrawing U.S. support on all levels, support for Ukraine, leaving Ukraine to negotiate with Russia, leaving Ukraine to establish its own government, to establish its neutrality, to take care of themselves. What this does from a military standpoint, in my opinion, is it frees up the U.S. and the U.S. military to devote more military resources to Israel. Here's what I would offer to you to gain an appreciation for, and that is a little bit of the backstory to U.S.-Israeli relationships. There is a political action committee known as AIPAC. This is the Israeli financial support, a lobbying organization, financial support for internal U.S. elections, congressmen, senators. They're seeking election and they're seeking re-elections, financially supported by Israel, to the tune of millions of dollars. The largest financial supporter, known as, often referred to as the donor class, donating money to campaigns. What does Israel receive for those financial contributions, those donations? It receives the ear of those senators and congressmen. It is able to directly, using financial support and the threat of withdrawing that support and defeating a re-election or even the initial election through financial means, means that Israel steers whatever administration is in power. Now, that certainly has been happening in the present administration. My expectation is that it would continue with the Trump administration, should he be elected. Make no mistake, Trump is a huge supporter of Israel, has received millions of dollars from Israel over the years, his previous run for the presidency and presently the same. He was influenced during his presidency directly by Israel, and that will continue should he ascend once again to the presidency. Therefore, pulling out of Ukraine, and really, I would expect near elimination of financial and military support of NATO, all of that frees up those resources to go to Israel. And you know, of course, in my previous Pulse videos, I've described and laid out my expectation as to what I think the Netanyahu administration is going to do with respect to Hezbollah in Lebanon, and thereby extension Syria, Iran, and this draws in again Russia. So it's interesting, the dynamic over on Ukraine from that track, if you will. Trump will seek peaceful relationships with Russia as it affects the Ukraine situation, while doing an end run over here to Israel and supporting Israel, ultimately in conflict with Russia. Understanding that presently, if we go to Yemen and the Houthis, through Iran, the Houthis are receiving missiles that they're launching presently in the present time on cargo ships, tankers, container ships, and the like, ostensibly because these vessels are supporting what Israel is conducting in Gaza. That's the excuse. It's bigger than Gaza, but that's the excuse in the public arena. Russia is supplying the Houthis through Iran with Russian missiles that the Houthis are launching at these cargo vessels, civilian cargo vessels. So on that track, now the United States comes into conflict with Russia by supporting Israel. Again, to repeat, it's pulling military and financial support away from Ukraine in order to support Israel's objectives, which ultimately, from a Zionist perspective, is the expansion agenda of Israel. And from their religious perspective, from a Kabbalist perspective, Israel seeks to regain the Promised Land, the Levant. And if you listen carefully, oftentimes there will be in the alternative media reference to Israel as Levant Israel. That's the goal. Now, I won't go into that. I want to keep this brief and on point here today. But the U.S., I would offer to you, when you think of Israel, its political structure, its domestic structure, its domestic issues, its military issues, its economic issues, the goals of the present administration in Israel, understand that Israel is also the United States through its financial support of the politicians in the United States, that it then is able, Israel is able to influence and steer to a great extent U.S. policies. Therefore, what we have is the United States as a larger, wealthier country operating as a larger version of Israel, because of Israel's influence over the United States government. Therefore, my expectation of this shift of military and financial support away from Ukraine to Israel to then enable Israel to initiate its military objectives against Hezbollah. We now have positioned in the Mediterranean an aircraft task force right there near Cyprus, off the coast of Syria, Lebanon, Israel. We have a carrier strike force in the region. Okay, so things are lining up, things are positioning. But I wanted to give you that sort of a sense of the timing of events, that perhaps Netanyahu on his part is going to wait until if there are elections in the United States, that's a big question in my mind. Will there even be an election on November 5th? But should Trump succeed in regaining the presidency, being reelected, and Project 2025 is instituted, then it seems highly likely that next year in 2025, all of what I just said with regard to NATO and Ukraine will transpire. That will happen in rapid succession. So again, keep in the background the understanding that Trump is very pro-Israel. He's in the pocket of Israel financially and has been really even before he was elected to his first term as president. He was in the pocket of the Israelis. This is not an anti-Semitic perspective. This is not statements of anti-Semitism. This is politics. This is finance. This is military. This is diplomacy. But it is also the Zionist agenda to regain the Levant. Okay? So with the 31 nations of NATO, Trump views the United States as bound to NATO. It's almost as if we're held hostage by NATO. He does not like that type of relationship, as I interpret his statements and his actions. You see, under Article 5, which is a mutual defense agreement, it's a condition within the NATO agreement with nations, that if one NATO member is attacked, then all of NATO must come to the aid, come to the defense of that singular or multiple nations that are coming, or nation states, NATO members that are coming under attack. And I'm sure you're familiar with that. My view of Trump is that he wants to free up the United States from being bound to Article 5. Again, the big picture here is the isolationist movement on the part of Trump and those that surround him and support him. I do expect an executive order not only reducing military and financial support with respect to Ukraine, but I really seriously doubt that the United States under Trump is going to continue to be bound as a member of NATO. This is what the European members of NATO fear the most, is the withdrawal, the entire withdrawal of the United States from NATO. Now, there has been statements to the direction of that would never happen. That is inconceivable. That even in the near term or the more long term, that the United States would ever withdraw from NATO. I would counter that by saying Trump is not a military-minded person. That's not his background. That's not his strength. His strength is business negotiation. Remember his book? I bought his book back, I think it was in early 1990s, The Art of the Deal. That's how he views the world. That's how he deals with the world, is through negotiation, not military. This is in opposition to how NATO views and deals with the world. NATO is trying to deal with the world on a military foundation, a military footprint, aggression and threats of aggression rather than negotiation. That's clearly evident right now. So this is why NATO views Trump as a threat, because he wants to take the business footing rather than the military footing. Okay? I'm not campaigning for Trump. I'm simply observing and reporting. Okay? It was announced just yesterday that Britain is sending missiles to Ukraine. This falls on the heels of what the U.S. has already done with respect to the delivery of missiles and the facilitation of the use of those missiles on the part of Ukraine. Now, Britain is doing very much the same that the United States has already done. Again, this paints that picture of NATO as the aggressor against Russia, and that can also extend to NATO as the aggressor vis-a-vis South China Sea, Philippines now, and Japan possibly, and coming against China. NATO is very much pushing the world towards World War III and the employment of tactical nukes, which I've explained in previous Pulse videos here on YouTube. I've expanded beyond what I'm at liberty to say here on this YouTube platform on my live streams. So if you'd like to hear more of my perspective, my analysis, my interpretation, my expectations that I can't really say in this venue, please join us through anthonypatch.com. Sign up as a supporter, as a subscriber of the research that my wife Kathleen and I do for your benefit, that you don't necessarily have the time to do, but we are at liberty to do that research for you, and then condense that down, present at least our perspective, our take, for whatever it's worth, our analysis of events around the world, geopolitical, and then other events that are more specific that I cannot go into here. A deeper dive, if you want to put it that way. Now, J.D. Vance has been selected by Trump and his campaign managers, etc. J.D. Vance has been selected as the running mate to Donald Trump as the vice presidential candidate. He is very much pro-ceasefire with respect to Ukraine and Russia. He has gone so far to state that the lines as they exist in Ukraine right now need to be frozen. No further movement by Russia, no further movement by Ukraine, and thereby extension the US and Britain and other NATO members in support of Ukraine, that the lines be frozen. Then we begin the negotiations under the umbrella of a ceasefire. That's the position of J.D. Vance. I won't go on, you know, too much further here. I want to keep this very brief. I think we've been running a little over a half an hour, so I want to end here. And just encourage you to visit us at anthonypatch.com, become a subscriber, support our research and our reporting if you choose to do so. We also offer opportunities in Band, which we use as a chat room during those live streams that are conducted three times a week, 2 hours apiece, on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sundays of every week. We have over 850 live streams in the archives, and you also have access to our monthly magazine, Entangled Magazine, where we provide a biblical perspective of world events, but also the scientific. We are very deep into the biology, the genetics. We are very deep into things that I can't mention here on this platform. We are very deep into quantum computing, artificial intelligence. We go into the patents that are issued. We look at the peer-reviewed scientific papers that are published in the scientific journals. And we do deep dives into science to the extent that there isn't time available, nor are we really allowed to speak openly and freely on this platform. So we do that behind what you would consider to be a paywall. We have lost our previous YouTube channel. We have been openly censored by various platforms in terms of financial platforms, subscriber platforms. So we had back in 2018 moved to a private venue, and that's why we ask for people to subscribe, is because we have been so heavily censored. At any rate, please join us at anthonypatch.com. Thank you for viewing this video. Thank you for your time. I will continue as events unfold and as time allows to at least once a day, if I can. It may not be every day, but my goal is at least once a day to sit down and visit with you and share some thoughts and some expectations. Thank you for your time and attention.